with us right now, and we welcome them, political commentators Neil Jones and Bridget Morton. Kia ora korua.
Morena.
Neil was chief of staff to the Labour leader, Jacinda Ardern, and prior to that was chief of staff to the then leader, Andrew Little. He's a director of public affairs firm Capital. Bridget's a director with public and commercial law firm Franks and Ogilvy, and a former Franks Ogilvy and a former senior ministerial advisor to the previous National-led government. She's a National Party member. She's currently volunteering for the party's deputy leader, Nicola Willis. We've got a couple of specific declarations for a topic that we will get to later, which is this deal that's been struck with Glenbrook Steel Mill, the government, and Contact Energy, where taxpayer money will go into new equipment that will reduce carbon emissions. And Neil, just to clear your...
Yeah, so I do some work for a company that is an emissions-intensive trade-exposed business, and I advise them on decarbonisation and government policy, very similar to what's happening with New Zealand Steel. I also used to be a senior official at the EPMU, which is the union for workers at NZ Steel, so I've had a bit to do with them over the years.
And Bridget?
NZ Steel was a client of Franks Ogilvy in some litigation matters. That's many years ago, and we don't currently act for them on anything.
Okay. Budget, there will be a variety of budget measures. If we get to discuss any that affect work you work on, please let me know. Will Thursday's budget win Labour any votes it wasn't getting already? Let's start with the incumbent and then we'll look at the opposition reaction. What does each of you make of it? Go first, Bridget.
I think it won't win them any new votes that it wasn't already had the potential to get. I think it was a very small target budget, and that was probably politically the right thing to do. Anything in terms of a big spend would have been seen as inflationary and would have seen as, I think, wasteful by a lot of people. So I think it would have been difficult for them to make that sort of big lolly scramble that you may expect in an election year. I think that does obviously set them up that there's going to be some big promises going into October when I think, based on the current predictions, they're hoping that that inflationary pressure has sort of come off a little bit and it might be a sort of safer zone as such to make that kind of announcement.
Yeah, I mean, it was a difficult time to do a budget in, and politically I think what the government was trying to do was to provide really concrete, believable help to the cost of living crisis, so, you know, things that seem quite achievable, and also, you know, deal with those public service, you know, health and education cost pressures and the cyclone. As Bridget said, it wasn't a time for massive splurges, big tax cut packages, anything like that. I think politically the government probably would have liked to have pared back the budget even more, but the cyclone, you know, that came along. Everyone has to deal with, every party would have to deal with that. But I think they probably got the balance about right overall. And to just say in terms of votes they're looking to get, I do think it was quite clearly targeted at those woman voters who are classic swing voters, sort of women and young families. If you look at those measures, whether it's the prescription charges or the ECE for two-year-olds, or even the public transport, I think it would have done some work in securing some of those votes.
That is a problem demographic for National historically, and is it at the moment?
Well, you look at the polls, and definitely the Jacinda Ardern effect had a massive impact on that particular group of women aged, say, 25 to about 45. I think you look at the more recent polls and you look dive down into them, and actually that's sitting much more with National now. Kind of, I think, surprising to a lot of people. And I think given the current two leaders we have, both sort of sitting very, very sort of centrist, I think that's definitely something up for grabs. I'm just not sure that this budget alone will be enough to kind of swing them either way. You're still looking at a sort of specific group of parents who sort of need to sit, you know, looking ahead of those next couple of years. For many, you know, their children are much older or don't have children yet at all. I think I'd just go back to Neil's point around, you know, the government would actually have wanted this to be a much more restrictive spending budget. Without a doubt, the cyclone is a bump that they had to react to. But they made a lot of song and dance about reprioritisation and savings. They made a very small amount of reprioritisation. I don't think they actually really looked hard and tried to really go tough at that sort of public service services kind of bloat factor. You know, expenditure has grown 60% over the last 4 years. That's an enormous figure. Kind of just to peer it back like they did, they didn't really deliver what they said they were going to deliver.
Well, they did cut $4 billion out, and I think that the spending thing's a bit overblown. I heard Christopher Luxon say addicted to spending, or, you know, words around addiction to spending 16 times in his budget speech. And when you hear it that much, you know that's the line they're trying to put out there. The reality is, you know, GDP, spending as a percent of GDP is about 32%. That's pretty average long in terms of the long term. Grant Robertson made the point they'll return to surplus around the same time as National did after GFC.
It is projected, yeah. But even
if you look at the record, the deficits under this government have been less as a percent of GDP than they were under National after GFC. So, you know, I just don't buy this idea there's this massive splurge of spending that is actually pretty restrained.
I think if you're going to argue that it was restrained spending, though, you'd have to look at those sort of initiatives that were announced. I mean, the gaming industry subsidy is definitely a nice to have. The childcare subsidy, I don't have to be welcomed by lots of parents, is a really expensive policy to have. I think Stephen Joyce wrote over the weekend, which I thought was really pointed, that a lot of those initiatives were sort of nice to have that had been sitting in the bottom drawer for a long time and suddenly got kind of pulled out. That prescription cost one as well, and I'm sure we'll get onto it in terms of the National Party reaction to that, but that is completely untargeted. It could be much cheaper by much better targeting that to the people that actually need it. I certainly don't need that. I don't think anyone around this table needs to have that $5.
We're already being subsidised.
Yes, in terms of why is it necessary to make it universal? If you're really focused on cutting spending, you would not roll out a universal benefit that doesn't need to be universal.
And I look forward to National making the argument that people on high incomes don't need tax cuts, so shouldn't get them. But they don't. They make it about people getting prescriptions. The reality is that prescription policy, I think, you know, it makes no sense to set up a new bureaucracy and a whole lot of barriers for people to get access to prescriptions for what's a $5 co-payment. It's already heavily subsidised. I mean, this is a common sense policy. It's something that will help with the cost of living, as will the ECE policy. It'll save people $133 a week. National itself has a policy on helping young families with childcare. So, you know, this idea that this is somehow outrageous when Labor does it, but National doing something similar isn't, I just don't buy. In terms of the spending, and I want to get to that, 80% of the new initiatives were just keeping up the cost pressures in health and education. The rest of it was either these cost of living initiatives or it was the cyclone or climate change resilience. I think the challenge for critics of the level of spending is what would you cut? And I haven't heard a credible explanation yet of what people think should actually be cut. I hear vague things about cut backroom civil servants or cut consultants, and that's, you know, a few coins down the back of the couch. We're talking, you know, if you're going to save the billions of dollars you need to fund the tax cuts National wants, I don't know where the money comes from.
In terms of this cost-cutting thing, I think everyone, you know, that always comes on the left, you know, they're going to make cost cuts to education and health and they have to cut whole programs and this sort of thing. It is a culture of spending, and you've seen that happen over the two terms of this government. And I think what we're, you know, you say they're vague things about looking down the back of the couch for those coins about saving on some comms professionals or not, but if you don't set that rhetoric from the top that they're not going to just have sort of spending and going to be mopped up wherever they can, you're going to have continued increases. You actually have to have restrained government, and you see that. You look at that Bill English, you know, coming in post-GFC and really putting those tighteners on to make sure that there wasn't leakage of money going where it wasn't increasing services. And nobody can argue that over the last 4 years we've seen a 60% increase in the output from our public services.
Look, $23 billion went on the wage subsidy, and we've had cyclones and other things.
But we've had huge growth in the economy and wages.
This is the other thing. This is the classic Labour National argument. Grant Robertson said it in our interview on Friday morning. They're catching up on population growth in the likes of health, for example.
And it's not just population growth.
So the question is, I mean, I take your point, Bridget, at some point, and we'll get to that, there are consequences for debt, and there are consequences for deficits, particularly if they become structural, right? And that includes consequences for people's interest rates and therefore their household budgets or the accommodation they're paying for or whatever. But it's the classic argument. Labour argues we are catching up on what National didn't fund, say, for population growth in health.
And look at workforce. Look at the wages of, say, nurses and other health professionals. I mean, you wouldn't know it. Under this government, they've had record increases, and it's still not enough, because for a decade, the increases were minimal to nothing. You had no investment in infrastructure. I mean, these things are real. So it's not just a case of saying we're tightening a few bureaucrats in the back room.
This will be and the rub of an argument going into the election, Bridget. And National is going to have to say how it is going to manage that budget. Because the other thing we discussed with Grant Robertson, and this is becoming painfully obvious to New Zealanders, is those costs of climate change are now, and they look like they are going to be ongoing. His argument is we can expect one of these big storms a year. We've had about five this year. that is not, it's not clear to me that that ongoing cost of recovery is funded even in this budget. There's a $6 billion fund underway, but people are going to ask, how are you going to pay for this stuff?
Yeah, and that absolutely is the right question, but I know we're talking about the budget today, but if you look at that as a specific example, this government promised that they were going to look, as part of the resource management reforms, climate adaptation legislation, to set some rules around ensuring where people were building and not building. Where is that? That hasn't happened. So yes, you can say who's going to pay for this, but actually you've got to get the settings right as well, and the government's lacking on that side. But that's an argument for another day.
Okay.
And I think that is the kind of discipline that National is going to say that they're bringing back into government, because it's not just discipline around, you know, the big sort of initiatives and those big numbers. We, of course, have to react to events. That is, number one, what we often need the government to do is come in behind us and support us when adverse events happen. But what also has to happen is it has to be done in a structured way, in a way that actually means that we're not doing this again in 3 years, 5 years or 7 years'
time.
And
I think the question, and this is an issue for National politically, because the government is already shaping up the attack line that this is the coalition of cuts with National and ACT, and it's going to be deep cuts to services. And, you know, that's a political line, but there's merit behind it as well. And I think, I can't believe we're still having this discussion. For years I've been on the show saying National cannot promise to reduce debt, keep up core spending, and cut taxes, you know, and pay for a cyclone. You know, these things don't add up. You have to make some trade-offs. And every time I hear a National Party spokesperson on the radio, whichever MP it is, they say, oh, it's addicted to spending, there's all this waste, and we'll cut taxes and this
what
and that, and we'll keep debt down.
It
doesn't add up.
What they haven't raised yet that a National of the key English era would, was you do this, you fund this by GDP growth. And you do that by lowering taxes and lowering burdens on businesses and lowering burdens and entry to businesses for middle-income earners or whatever. And it's a difficult argument to make at the moment because Reserve Bank is busy trying to crush GDP growth.
And it's smoke and mirrors, too.
Just hang on. Well, it's not smoke and mirrors.
Well, I mean, it is.
If you earn more as a country...
Party can say our plan will magically increase the economy. Well, ultimately, you've got to go on what Treasury forecasts say.
But when you talk about waste, though, there are so many examples of this government waste that we can point to.
Yeah, and there are examples of every government.
Hang on, let it finish.
Sorry.
So when you sort of say, you know, they've made no decisions about what they would, you know, cut and what they wouldn't, they have made many announcements about things that they would no longer sort of fund and things that they would target down. You also just got to look at what is happening in terms of spending. Grant Robinson has never made an expenditure allowance. He's always blown it. He's already spent 50% of next year's expenditure allowance. So if they get back into government, we're just going to have another big spending again. You can't say that there is no basis to this being a wasteful spending government when you have things like the cost of living payment in last year's budget or the provincial growth fund.
Look, you can point to it in every government. The last National government got a whole lot of sheep, sent them on a plane to Saudi Arabia to a model farm, and all the sheep died. I mean, we can all find examples. The reality is, all I would say is put down a fiscal plan, write an alternative budget. ACT did it last couple of weeks ago. Labour went out for Labour in opposition. We did that after the budget. And it's a matter of credibility. It's about saying, here's what we would cut and here's what we would fund, and not just constantly re-spending imaginary
Let's
savings.
Talk about another issue that will feed into this election, however it breaks, and that is whether this hope, belief, prayer, faith that inflation is peaking and will come down to, I think, within the target band by 2025, is it?
Second half of 2024,
Half of 2024. Well, that would be welcome. You've got now almost record numbers month by month of immigration coming into the country, right? Mm. You've got the cost and the stimulus of the rebuilding from the storms. And you've got a Reserve Bank governor yet to give his view on whether that budget was expansionary, because there is more borrowing, expansionary or not. And you've got an initial test of that coming this Wednesday. But that is going to be a key issue, isn't it, as to whether National can argue we cannot be in a position where inflation stays this high and where interest rates keep going up and where government deficits keep rising as well. They will have a case to make.
Yeah, and Labour will be hoping very much that Adrian Orr doesn't hike interest rates, because that'll give National the opportunity to say, well, you've blown spending and now interest rates are higher.
Well, of course, he's to pay no attention to the wishes and whims
of
any political
master. Well, indeed, but I'm saying Labour would be hoping. But look, I think that's possible. You know, Reserve Bank has been very hawkish, far more hawkish than, you know, overseas comparisons. But, you know, while this budget is expansionary, the out years are deflationary. And I would say with inflation coming down, you know, quite rapidly, actually, I would hope Adrian Orr would have the sense not to hike interest rates at this stage.
Let's talk about where National needs to go looking for those votes it needs if it is to, you know, get itself an act over the line, because it's tied up really tight right now. National doesn't appear to have the option of Te Pāti Māori, which may come in with at least three MPs looking at how their numbers are shaping up now. And is it looking in the wrong places? Is it looking in the wrong places with some of the reaction to this budget, for example, Bridget? Where are the voters it wants to convince across?
Well, I think always with the budget week, oppositions, no matter what party they are always on the back foot. It is a week for the government. They have absolute control, except for that one year where I think the budget was leaked ahead of. That was definitely the opposition.
That was the happy days.
Online, yeah. That was when the opposition was definitely on the front foot there. But for the most part, it's always about the government leading the narrative. It's really difficult, no matter what who the opposition is, to get a good line out there. I think they did struggle last Thursday. That headline that they would cancel the subscription thing was a bad headline to be the one thing that people would say National came out of the budget with. I do think, though, that the policy is right, as we sort of already discussed, even though the politics of what they said was bad. I think for National now, and I can see that, you know, they've embarked on this massive sort of tour of across the sort of country with Luxon and Willis and things going around and really talking about the nuances of what this would look like in terms of cost of living. I think for most people, they kind of don't want this. You know, we can talk as much as we want about surplus and deficits and, you know, what this does for school, all those things, but people actually just want to know, are they going to get any relief in terms of their, you know, personal household income? And if you look at the budget alone, there is nothing in there to give people hope that their personal household situation is going to change in the next 6 months.
That argument I hear, and people are under such stress wherever they sit, perhaps except for the cartoon we saw the other day about the won't anyone think about the $190,000 tax bracket, which was, as you say, the knee-jerk response drew that in. But I think the challenge, Bridget, is that these repeat storms, which are affecting our biggest city, they're under rain again today in Auckland. They've seen the cost, they see what's happening, and they know there's going to be billions of dollars attached to that, may make people say, who actually does have a plan to deal with what are clearly longer-term problems? It's not going to be just, my God, I'm up against it with my mortgage, or I'm having to cancel my kids, whatever. There is a bigger issue and people are going to want some convincing about who can deal with it.
Yeah, and that goes back to sort of what I was saying earlier. If you note on that cyclone package that was announced pre-budget, from National, you did see them agreeing with that spend. They said, actually, we do need to spend here. We're concerned about delivery. And we're still concerned about there's a lot of property owners that don't have any certainty. That was their line of attack. It wasn't about actually where we spend or not. So it goes back to my other argument about, whilst we are talking about the budget today, you've got to get those regulatory settings right. And the government has promised to do something about it for many, many years, and they have gone nowhere near it. And so they're going to go into the election. They can't promise that they're going to put some forms around this because they've had the last 3 years.
There's a hell of a lot of frustration in the rural areas here. I was watching again on the news last night. There are people volunteering their time from Motueka to come up and start working on hundreds of kilometres of fence posts that need to be in place because animals need to be secured. And yet they just feel like they've been abandoned. Again, it comes back to that question of delivery with this government.
Yeah, and I think for National, that's a strong line of attack that they should be continuing to make. I also think, you know, they need to be focusing very firmly on middle New Zealand and the cost of living. That is the only game in town. That is what the election will be about. And both Labor and National are in that battle. Andrea Vance had a good piece in the weekend where she sort of asked, is National focusing on the wrong fight in some ways? Are they too worried about ACT or, you know, losing votes to the right? I think they should let ACT go and hunt on the right, and they should focus on the middle. You know, I thought that prescription charge response, Bridget's right, and I've worked in budgets and opposition, it's really hard. You can make errors on the day because you're under so much pressure with so little time. But I think, you know, that was something that was an ideological knee-jerk that made them look a bit mean and out of touch. And I think they've got to be really careful that they just stay firmly in the lane of Middle New Zealand.
Okay, it's interesting, the non-reaction so far to the trusts tax going up. And it's the old rule, if you move the top tax rate up, you must match the trust rate, or else everyone just moves everything into a trust. That won't affect some middle-income ordinary families potentially, right? But National has not come out and said we're scrapping that straight away, has it?
Not as far as I'm aware.
And it's a rort. I mean, when I set up my company, I was advised to create a family trust and then put family trust shares in and dodge tax and all kinds of stuff. And when I said I didn't want to, I was looked at like I was crazy.
Okay.
You know, this needed to be closed.
Let's talk about, and this is where all your various declarations come in. I think, Neil, you've got particular ones here if you're advising clients on similar matters.
I made that at the start, Catherine.
Yeah. Let's just remind people now.
Sure.
The Glenbrook Steel Mill, who's not a client of yours, is this a big win for emissions cuts, a big practical thing to do, or is it unjustified corporate welfare?
Well, what I thought was interesting, and it really made me think of the green schools. James Shaw, 2020, you know, big values thing around, you know, we don't support private schools, we want to support the environment and things, and then signed off on a school that would be really elitist for a certain group of people. This has a similar feel to it. For the last, like, particularly last 6 months, you've seen the Greens go really hard on super profits, on foreign nationals not paying their share, on the fact that, you know, these big emitters need to pay for the damage they're doing to the environment, etc., etc. And their response to that is then subsidise that one group of people they have told us, time and time again, are the most evil people possible. And I just find how they can kind of be reconciled from a political point of view, that this is where the Greens, you know, proclaim that this is the biggest climate action they're doing in an election year.
Because it's actually cuts to gross emissions. And that's what this country isn't doing. And we're running up a bill, yet to be paid, if we choose to pay it, of paying other countries offsets. And the argument for this is, instead of using the taxpayer funds for that, use the taxpayer funds up front to cut the emissions. That's the argument. I'm not saying what I think of it, but that's the argument.
Yeah, but I think without a doubt, though, if you're sitting as the Greens or an environmentalist, you're saying, well, the people that we're subsidising are the people that have done the damage. And so from a political point of view, and that's purely what I'm talking about at the moment, is how do you actually sell that as the biggest win for the climate out of this budget?
Well, I can tell you how.
Is for a foreign national to be subsidised when you have said that they need to be paying rather than being given money.
That's another story we'll touch on.
I mean, just to repeat, I do some work for an emissions-intensive trade-exposed industry in a similar position to NZ Steel, and I used to work for the Union for Steel Workers, so I've had a bit to do with this over the years. Look, this was a very simple case at heart about how do we reduce our emissions, right? And it's very basis. And it's $16 a tonne to reduce these emissions. If the government does not do that, it will be buying credits offshore. The New Zealand unit's currently about $55. I heard the one in Europe, it's about €85 a tonne. There's a huge uncertainty there. Regardless of how much we pay, it's going to be a lot more than $16. So purely on a government accounting basis, it saves us money. It's a good thing. It's going to seriously reduce emissions, and it's also going to keep jobs. So, you know, these are really good jobs. Six-figure, you know, blue-collar jobs. If they went, they'd go overseas. We'd lose all that tax revenue.
And we need steel. Let's be honest.
So actually, the frame of how you just there's a supply chain issue, right,
okay,
as well. So the reason this makes sense is it's called a just transition. I'm a real opponent of what I call green Thatcherism, which is the idea that you just leave it to the ETS and it sort of falls where it may. And actually, you do need to intervene sometimes.
It undermine the ETS, and the government's already done that. It did it in December when the Climate Commission said, do not let the price go down, make the price go up. That is what is supposed to force companies
to invest in technology. The problem is just leaving it to the ETS?
We're not leaving anything to the ETS.
Well, no, but that's the alternative, right? And if you did leave it to the ETS, I mean, you would be subsidising them anyway because they get free allocation, but if you left it to the ETS, the price has to rise into the hundreds of dollars per unit.
So it's the second blow then to the ETS, and so does that mean we're going to be lining up a whole bunch of companies?
Yes, we are.
It's incentivising basically a whole lot of, you know, NZ Steel S companies to come in the hand and cap to the government and say, yes, we want, you know, we need to, for us to do this, we have to have, you know, government support for
and,
it.
And if it speeds up emissions reduction and reduces emissions, that's a good thing. I mean, let's be clear, capitalism is not a moral system. The way it works is businesses have to compete. And if we relied on the for it to become economically viable, for the business case to stack up, and you're paying hundreds of dollars per unit, as well as every household's cost going up, what that means is that quite likely the board says, you know what, we're not going to make that investment, we're going to expand a plant in the US, and we're going to import and send all the jobs away.
How do you sell this in an election? And that's Labor's and the Greens' challenge. Yes, you can sit and do the accounting and the maths, and if the system that they are setting up in order to cut gross emissions rather than pay for foreign offsets is going to work, this is the kind of thing you do. But how do you sell this at an election, Bridget? And what does National say about it, actually? Because that's got to make a call.
Yeah, I think in the first instance, one of the issues is the fact that this was, you know, announced within sort of 4 days of the government saying we don't have money to give, you know, more, we can't give more beneficiaries more money, we can't do things about dental, we can't change the abatement rate for working for families, all of those kind of things. So, you know, we can talk about the nuances and the complexities of climate change, all this kind of stuff, but ultimately there'll be a whole lot of people that were so disappointed out of Thursday's budget that thought that there was going to be help under this Labor government that instead has seen a multinational get the money that they think, you know, could have been allocated from a pure politics point of view. I think for National has come out and said essentially that this is the wrong time for this type of spend, which is that it's too much money going to a foreign national that we need to actually be spending on some of the things that are affecting households. And I think that is a really strong argument because it's households that are going to vote for you, not a company.
And the problem National has is the alternative is the government paying more money. So they're not saving money if they don't do this, they're paying more money. And secondly, National has to at some point grapple with the fact that for the ETS to make the changes it wants, the prices of units and the prices to households for every basic good, including petrol, will skyrocket. And that's their plan. And that's why you actually need to do more than the ETS. I'm not saying get rid of it, but actually supplement it with practical actions. And that's, you know, that's what it is. It's a very practical, pragmatic action to reduce emissions.
Ooh, it's going to be a doozy, isn't it, the rest of this year. Thank you very much, Neil Jones and Bridget Morton.